me show you how this is done. Hold the glass up and examine the wand against the light. You're looking for color and clarity. Now, stick your nose in it. Maybe some strawberry. Oh, there's just a flutter of like a nutty Edam cheese.
When do we drink it?
Now. Are you chewing gum?
No.
Spit it out.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
You are about to participate in a great adventure.
All right, everybody, get ready for a blast from the past.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape and all its glory, all the vine, all the time. Yes, we have made it to the year end of 2009, and that means I get to lay back and have a little bit of fun with this show. Today, we're going to kind of do a retrospective, not of the Wine Crush, but of the past decade in the wine business. The great stories, the ones that will be known for years to come, when they talk about the 2000s, since we never found a way to really name this decade. If you think about it, it was never the aughts, it was never the zeros, it was never anything. So we're going to wind up being the lost decade, I am sure. From 2000 to 2009, no one will ever be able to quantify it. But certainly there were some interesting things that happened during the year. And today I want you to sit back. We're going to talk about probably 10 of them. We'll see how carried away I get. And of course, we want to know what you have thought over the years. We want to know your opinion. So as we get through this and you come up with some ideas, call us 877-4CRUSH1. And for those of you out there, I'm sure you have serious opinions on the big stories from the decade. Please do let us know. You can also do that at lauralawson@winecrush.com. But before I get into my whole story, I have to do an I Told You So. I love doing I Told You So's. They make me feel so much better. Over the past year, we have done a lot about Dana Estates, D-A-N-A Estates. We've had Pete Perry, we've had the winemaker, we've had different people on the show, and I had a lot of response from you calling in because I recommended a $200 bottle of Cabernet. I told you this was an up-and-coming winery, I told you it was someone to watch, and I begged all of you collectors, if you are ever going to do anything, go buy a bottle of Dana. Well, as of this week, Robert Parker has come out with his ratings for the next vintage, the 2007 of Dana Estates. I will throw in the fact that I did help a little bit with that vintage, but that's neither here nor there. For the record, Dana Estates received 100 points from Robert Parker. It is, by all essences, the perfect wine. So where else should you have heard about it? Of course, on The Wine Crush. We told you first. We will always tell you first. Trust my opinions? Yes, they are usually right. So there. I told you so. Hope you got it while you could. So as we look back over 2000, the whole decade, there were a lot of interesting things that happened. But you can't do a retrospective of a whole decade without talking about the one important thing that everyone's always asking, vintages. People will ask me until the day I die and leave my last breath, what vintage should I collect? What vintage was the best one? As we look back at 2000, the whole decade, there weren't that many outstanding vintages. It's not like the 90s. It's not like things came forth and every vintage that came forth was a great and exciting one. But if we look at it as a whole, for those of you who like to drink across the pond, 03 and 05, France and Italy, Burgundy, Bordeaux, outstanding vintages. California, not so much. California really does not come into play until 2007, which I find ironic because we won't be drinking this until past 2010. But the only vintage that stood out for California wines was 2007. Now, of course, when we're talking about vintages as well, we have to look at poor little Australia. We'll get to that later in the show. But you look at the 05 Barossa, it was some of the best wines on the planet. So as we look back, think about this. 03, 05, 07, I guess we could say it was an odd decade for the vintages that came out. So keep that in mind. The best thing that happened, though, and I think this is something we need to quantify as we look ahead to 2010 and beyond. We learned to look past the vintages and their ratings. We learned to look past what was on the label. We learned to look past what things like the Wine Spectator Vintage Chart says. We drank for the moment. We drank for the time. And that is probably the most outstanding thing to come out of this. If you're a collector, yes, you're going to pay attention to the 07s. But for the rest of us who were new to get on the wine train, we learned that it didn't matter what year was on the bottle. It mattered what was in the bottle. And that's the important thing to take out of this. Even though certain vintages stood out as being outstanding, it's winemakers and wineries that prove the test of time. Was 2000 a great vintage? For some people. Was 2003? For some people. Was 2005? Rarely. But the difference is we look at individuals. Doesn't matter whether or not the winery had gotten all the great points. It doesn't matter if the winemaker decided he was going to do something different. You found a winery, you stuck with them. And that's important, day in, day out. Everyone has their house style. Everyone has their house wine. But in doing so, you need to look past what's on the label and trust in who's making the wine. And I do want that to stand out among vintages. Yes, 07 will prove to be a great one. But for the great winemakers, every year will be a great one. So keep that in mind as you move into 2010. Now, you get past vintages, you have to think about what else really, really impacts what we drink on the table. Well, a big part of that was behind the scenes in this past decade. Consolidations. Yes, all of us know that the wine sets have expanded in your local mega mart. We know that critter labels ran rampant. We know that there was a lot of labels and a lot of stuff out there that didn't necessarily have wineries to back it up. A lot of that had to do with the consolidations in the wine business. And when I say consolidations, we're talking about the mega companies, the ones that own everything you can get your hands on. Whether it's a giant one like Foster's, whether it's a giant one like Foley, whether it's a giant one like Constellation. In this past decade, we saw someone like Constellation pick up close to 30 different brands. Alice White, Amberley, Ban Rock Station, Barossa, Bay of Fires, Munda Brook, Drylands, Kim Crawford. The list goes on and on and on to include some of our all-time favorites. Estancia, Franciscan, Hoag, Mount Veeder, Paul Masson, Ravenswood, Robert Mondavi, Simi. You keep going. And what happens is anytime you see a boom and bust in the wine business, you find a lot of people willing to sell their wineries. Whereas we've seen family-owned wineries that were the hits of the 90s. In fact, I want you to think about people talking about the cult classics, people standing in line, begging on waiting lists to get these wines. Well, all of a sudden, when you have excess grapes and you have an economy that falls out from under you, these great family wineries have to sell themselves. Someone like Firestone, who had to sell to Foley. And all of a sudden, we have these great conglomerates, and they become top-heavy. So right now, we're in a situation where we have maybe 10 major players that own 80% of the wineries. It's going to happen. I'm going to predict it for the 2010s. We are going to start seeing these wineries fall out of these great conglomerates. We're already seeing it now with Foster's. For those of you who pay attention to the wine news, you know that Foster's is slowly divesting itself of brands. We will see more and more of that as things progress. So keep that in mind. The consolidation, it's been great for the consumer. It means there's an excess of great juice going into a whole bunch of different brands we may or may not see again. But ultimately, has it been the downfall of the family winery? And I think that's something we have to consider. Something we look at the Wine Crush, we try and bring you these family wineries. Whether it's someone like Sobraja Family, whether it's something like B.R. Cohn, these are the guys who are standing the test of time and fighting the good fight. So I urge you, even though the consolidation has been great, find your local family wineries. Find those that have been around for a while and are struggling to keep up. Just like we want to help the local merchant, we need to help the local wineries. We need to help the family wineries. So as we go into 2010, I think we'll see a lot more startups. We'll see a lot more unique things coming out. But in the meantime, keep your eyes on the back of the label and see who actually owns that wonderful wine that you thought was a family winery. If it's someone big and you can't pronounce their name, then definitely look further down the shelf and find someone local to support. So we looked at consolidations. We looked at vintages. So, okay, our vintage dictates what we drank. The consolidations told us what to drink, but another big story from the past decade is where were we going to drink? California AVAs, agricultural viticultural areas. These are the segments that actually define California. When we started out in 2000, it was very simple. Is it from Napa? Is it from Sonoma? And looking at the different valleys, we really knew a difference between Napa and Sonoma. Well, we've seen a huge difference since then. And in doing so, we've broken down some AVAs, different areas, whether it was Russian River, whether it was Carneros, whether it was Oakville, whether it was Rutherford. And these are things that I really want you to consider as we go forward. They definitely impacted the last decade, and they're going to be of preeminent importance as we go forward. Well, right now, we're going to take a small break. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about AVAs and how they affect how you drink. And, of course, we'll continue on my diatribe on the past decade.
Laura Lawson's back in a moment with more of The Wine Crush.
I heard in the news the other day about how one man's $3,000 credit card balance exploded to over $10,000 in no time at all. As good as the plastic in your wallet may be, if you run into any problems with your credit card companies, they'll hit you so hard with late and over-limit fees that your head'll spin, and so will your debt. At that point, you cannot stop your runaway debt problem. Well, yes, you can. If your credit card debt is out of control, you're getting collection calls, you're mad as hell, and you can't take it anymore, call us and one of our partner companies will negotiate on your behalf and show you strategies to help you get out of debt.
If you have $10,000 or more in unsecured debt, call now for a free debt analysis. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactiv works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-727-8614.
Proactiv's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective, it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial plus a free refining face mask. Call toll-free now, 1-800-727-8614. That's 1-800-727-8614.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to pack the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys, you going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and it's just you and me today. We are talking about the decade in retrospective. We are looking at wine and what all happened in the past 10 years. Well, when we left, we were talking a little bit about California AVAs, agricultural viticultural areas. You say that real fast and see how well you do. But ultimately, what it comes down to is the United States has always been kind of not a criminal element, but we've always been very independent. You look across the pond, everyone's very rigid, very strict on this came from Burgundy, this came from Corton, this came from Corton Grand Cru. There's a whole lot of different specifics that are attached to wine that's imported into this country. One thing that makes us very unique is that everything we do is kind of, well, I hate to say random, but obviously a label is just a label in the state. It doesn't tell you more than anything else. You can look at Vintner's Reserve, and there's no definition for reserve. So in 1980, we decided that we were going to have special viticultural areas. And in these areas, there had to be something unique about it, whether it was a unique soil, a unique geography, a unique factor that made it a specific area. Well, we're 29 years into AVAs, and it's still a battle. It started out, we had the first one, believe it or not, 1980 in Missouri, and we have added probably 29 more in the past decade. And what's happening now is these AVAs are getting either very, very specific or very, very general. Now, how this affects you is the different flavors, the different profiles. Ideally, when you go to a shelf and you pick up a bottle of Russian River Pinot Noir, I hope you know it's from Sonoma, but past that, you know it's going to have a certain flavor to it. It's going to have a certain berry flavor. It's going to have a little bit of cherry. It's going to have cotton candy. It's going to have some dirt in it. And that's the whole point of having AVAs. Well, the battle is on, and people are fighting because they realize that the smaller an AVA is, the more exclusive an AVA is, the more money they can probably get from it. If they can be very specific on where the wine comes from, then obviously it's more valuable. So as we look back on the past year, think about all the fights that have happened, from Paso Robles trying to get their own AVA to Calistoga getting their own AVA. And Calistoga is very relevant for those of you who actually went to see the movie Bottle Shock. You know that Calistoga is the home of Chateau Montelena, the guy who won the big fight in 1976 with the French. Well, they have fought and fought and fought. And you look at the politics that get involved in creating these AVAs. Oh, Calistoga can't be an AVA because then Calistoga Winery, which actually is not in Calistoga, can't have their label anymore. We've made it very intricate and we've made it very delicate to try and figure out where wines come from. So that's been a huge part of looking at wines and wineries for the past decade. Basically, who am I and where did I come from? You have right now, you have Sonoma. They're asking all of their AVAs, whether it's Carneris or Russian River or Dry Creek, yes, they have those on the label, but please put Sonoma County on it. Everybody is fighting over geography. It's been the story of time immemorial. It's going to happen over and over again, whether you're in France, whether you're in Italy, whether you're in Germany, and apparently now here in the States. We're going to fight over dirt, and we're going to argue over it. So as we look ahead to 2010, I think we'll see a whole lot more AVAs pop up. But on the same token, I think we'll see a whole lot of fight and a whole lot of debate about who actually owns the right to an AVA and how it gets passed. So keep that in mind. Well, of course, it all wouldn't matter what gets to your table except for the fact of how it gets to your table. Obviously, the vintage matters. Who makes the wine matters. Where it comes from matters. But how did it get there? How did you actually get your wine? And that's something that's been a big story of the past decade is the advent of the internet and all the internet retailers. Let's face facts, in 1990s, if we looked around, decided we needed a bottle of Chateauneuf du Pape or if we needed a bottle of Sobraja Family Vineyards, we had to call the winery. We had to ask them to ship it to us. Not everybody had websites. Certainly, it never crossed our mind to put in wine.com and ask them to ship it to us. So in doing that, it makes it much easier and much more accessible for us to have great wines. And I think it's one of the best things to come out of the past decade. Whether it's wine.com or the battle of Amazon, yes, we're selling wine. No, we're not selling wine. Yes, we are selling wine. At least they can make up their mind at some point. But what's also cool is now every retailer in states and out of states can post their wines on it. I've watched this cause problems time and time again. People come to me and say, Laura, I can get Kendall Jackson for $8.99 up in New York State. They'll ship it to me. Well, good for you. So what's happened is it's actually managed to bring some prices down. It's actually helped everything to be competitive. It's made it a level playing field. And I think that's very, very good. People talk about the antique roadshow effect when they talk about collecting old things. I think y'all have heard I collect old wood. I collect things that normal people don't collect. Well, antique roadshow started a phenomenon that things that people once thought were very, very rare realized they weren't. The same thing has happened with the advent of the internet retailers. People who thought they had that rare bottle of 1996 Araujo Syrah all of a sudden realized there was many around the country. So it's helped make wine a little bit more affordable day in and day out. So my hat's off to the internet retailers. My heart goes out to you trying to figure out how to get wine where, but ultimately I think it's the best thing that could happen to make this truly a worldwide and a countrywide phenomenon. But with the advent of the internet, of course, every state's going to have to put their 2 cents worth in. And anytime we get to a situation where someone from New York can ship someone to, say, North Carolina, there's going to become somebody who wants their hand in the pocket. So one of the huge stories from this past decade has been the shipping laws. In the past, it hasn't been that big of a deal. Wineries would ship things very quietly to people's boxes, and no one really knew the difference. But now, all of a sudden, with billions of bottles of wine flying around, plane, car, cargo, automobile, train, people want to know where that alcohol is going and why. So we've even seen it go to the Supreme Court this year. We have found arguments about why wine should be shipped, why it's considered an alcoholic beverage that should be banned, and who's going to allow reciprocal shipping. Do the wineries in North Carolina get to ship to California? Of course. Do the wines in California get to ship to North Carolina? Absolutely not. So the federal government in the past decade has had to step in and say, hey, you're messing around with interstate shipping laws. So it makes it difficult and hard for you to find your favorite wines. So as we look ahead, something to remember, I think we'll see in 2010, finally, everybody can ship whatever they want to anywhere. But in the meantime, keep in mind, there are still some states where you can't ship wine to. Alabama, Arkansas, Delaware, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Mississippi, Montana, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, and Utah. You can't ship there. You can ship out of there. Their wineries can. But right now, these are all states that are causing problems with people being able to get the wine they want. So hopefully you don't live in one of those states and are trying to get some, but you never know. My heart goes out for you in the next decade, and hopefully things will change. We're going to take a small break right here, but we're going to get back into our introspective in just a moment.
Are you feeling the credit card crunch? Increasing prices and the cost of credit are stretching budgets and preventing people just like you from getting ahead or just catching up with their debts. American Financial Solutions is a nonprofit organization that can help you get back on track with your debts and strengthen your financial situation. We offer a customized debt management plan, not a consolidation loan or a settlement, but a renegotiation of terms with your current creditors. You could benefit from lower interest rates, reduced fees, finally having your past due accounts brought back into current status, and a single monthly payment. So if you're falling behind on your credit cards, medical bills, or accounts and collections, get your current statements together and give American Financial Solutions a call now.
Here's the number for your free debt analysis. 800-430-8804. 800-430-8804. 800-430-8804. Not all services available in all states. Terms and conditions apply.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare. the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and Earthshare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their roiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and you are listening to a retrospective of the past decade in the wine business. Yes, I know a lot of people right now are doing a countdown of all the interesting things that happened in 2009. We're broader around here. We like to think bigger, so that's where we are. We ended the last segment talking a little bit about shipping and how difficult shipping had been in the past decade. I'm going to get off shortly on a small little soapbox here, and this goes out to everybody who is listening, who is either on the wholesale, who's on the winery, who's on the government side, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, the keynote, the keystone to their argument about shipping is they're worried about underage drinking. That is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard of in my life. Yes, some 18-year-old is going to get mom's credit card and order a case of Beringer White Zinfandel, sit patiently by the front door, and wait for it to arrive so they can go get drunk with their friends. This is ultimately about commerce. This is about expanding people's horizons, and we can't expect to have a total wine culture in this state until we're allowed to drink and ship whatever we want to. Lighten up. There's a lot worse things out there that could be happening. So as we continue our retrospective, we have to look back on the losses of this past decade, and there's no doubt that we lost truly one of the greatest advocates of the United States wine culture ever. Yes, Robert Mondavi. He passed away May 16, 2008. He was truly the driving force behind where we are today with our wine, where the consumer is today with what they drink, and how they actually get it to market, how they taste different things. He was truly a pioneer. For a man who started at Stanford in 1937, he certainly led the way. He is also a great microcosm of what we all experience in our life. When you look at the history of Robert Mondavi, brothers infighting, affairs, difficulties trying to see the future, trying to plan ahead, and failures. The man had it all in his life, but yet he still wound up being a shining star. We can use him as a lesson. No matter what adversity we encounter, it can get better. In 1966, he built the first winery that was major after Prohibition. He really took it to heart. He took Napa Valley to heart and decided he was going to make something of it. Of course, it didn't help that he had acquired a small little vineyard called Tokalon, which today I think still is the penultimate winery, the penultimate vineyard when it comes down to what's coming out of California. In 1978, he did something unheard of. He went across the pond, made friends with a small little family, the Mouton Rothschilds, and asked the Baron to come over to see California and to get into a joint venture. Opus One heralded the big one-name-only wines and certainly defined Napa as a worldwide entity. When the Rothschilds can come over and make Cabernet they're willing to put their name on, that says a lot about our little corner of the world. But ultimately, Mondavi's had a lot of problems. He saw a lot of fights. They did the movie Mondovino in the past decade, and they said he was the devil. He was the root of all globalization of wine. He was the face of how wine tasted the same in every country, no matter where you went. Well, I like the fact that they actually attributed Mondavi to being global and to being worldwide. But ultimately, whether or not globalization had a face or not, it brought wine to more consumers who'd never seen it before. So if you want to bedevil him, so be it. But ultimately, his pioneering spirit made sure that whether you were in the rural courts of the United States, whether you were up in Canada, whether you were a small little place in Italy, you knew about California wines and you knew what to drink. In 2001, he founded what would turn to be a doomed enterprise, but Copia, the American Center for Food, Wine, and Arts. So not only did he love wine enough to be passionate about it, he wanted to make sure everyone else was too and to learn everything that could be put together. So was our decade a great loss for us? Absolutely, because at 94 years old, Robert Mondavi passed on. But he did teach us something. He taught us passion. And all of us have our different passions in life. Robert Mondavi's passion for the grape and passion for the wine business helped influence every single one of us who talk about wine today. So hats off to Robert Mondavi. You are certainly missed. I would be remiss also if I didn't comment on the passing of Don Risen. His name is not as well known as Robert Mondavi, but he was a Zinfandel pioneer. He was an American pioneer. He helped make the red Zinfandel to be known on every table. Ridge Vineyard certainly has lent itself a lot to making the American Zinfandel, the American grape, part of today's culture, and it would not have happened without Don. Once again, Don, you will certainly be missed as we go into the next decade. So as we look further up over the decade, we get past our losses, we think about other things that have been impactful. And something we have to talk about, even though they were created in 1964, I think the greatest heated debate we saw in the past decade, of course, were screw caps. They were invented in 1964. They were used commercially in 72. They were phased out in the 80s. They were reintroduced in the 90s. But it wasn't until this past decade where we really saw them hit home. Starting in 2000, Plump Jack decided to do half their production in cork, half in screw cap. And in doing so, defined how we're going to look at Cabernet. We learned that screw caps and cork can actually have the same influence on wine. Since then, we have done great debates. We have actually done a poll here on the Wine Crush. B.R. Cohn reached out to you and asked whether they should go to screw cap or whether they should go to cork closure. And it makes a difference in how people perceive wines. There's always the have and the have-nots. They say they lose the romance with having a screw cap, but on the same token, they complain about the fact that their wine tastes like cardboard. Is there a mid-ground on this? No. Are screw caps here to stay? Absolutely. Whether it's because of our Australian counterparts or simply because of the fact we like being able to run to our refrigerator, easily open a bottle of wine, pour a glass, put the cap back on, and put it up for another day, it is there. And as we move forward, I'm sure people are going to come out with new creative screw cap closures. We're already seeing the glass enclosures that are coming out. But ultimately, the great debate that sparked over screw cap versus cork has definitely helped the wine industry. Whether people liked wine, whether they didn't like wine, they had to step in on one side or the other and have an opinion. And after all, that's what wine's all about, having an opinion one way or the other. We have to take a small break right now, but when we continue, we will talk about probably the three greatest impacts of the past wine decade.
Now that we sat nice, broke bread together, shared a glass of wine, I feel I know you a little.
It's dance time in Texas, and we're striking up the band.
Z-Max. It helps your car, truck, motorcycle, or boat save gas and last longer. The secret of Z-Max is micro-lubrication. Z-Max penetrates deep into the metal of your engine and drivetrain where regular oil can't. Z-Max reduces heat and friction, dissipates carbon buildup, restores power, and reduces fuel consumption. Z-Max maintains mileage in your new car and improves mileage in your older car. Log on to Z-Max.com to find a Z-Max retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
Available at Walmart.
Mr. Jackson, we're calling to say you're late on your credit card bill. Can you please call us to schedule a payment and avoid future late fees?
If you're getting collection calls from your credit card companies and you want to put a stop to it, gather your bills now and call the Debt Helpline.
Mr. Jackson, we've been trying to reach you. If we don't hear from you soon, your account will go into collections.
We can help you stop the late and over limit fees on most of your credit cards and reduce your high interest rates, in some cases up to 60%.
Mr. Jackson, this is our last warning call. The next call will be from our legal department.
Get your debt and credit card bills under control. Gather your bills and call today for a free consultation on how we can help you get out of debt. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. That's 800-948-6815.
When a legend like Carroll Shelby puts Z-Max in every car he owns, maybe you should too.
I know it works.
Z-Max with micro-lubrication reduces wear on vital engine parts and increases horsepower. If you're a custom engine builder or a do-it-yourselfer, Z-Max belongs in your car. Z-Max. Easy to use. One in your gas and one in your oil every 5,000 miles.
I put my name on the line on that, and I mean it.
Log on to ZMAX.com and find a retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
Available at Walmart.
Mozart's are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes
and soon you realize how impactful your kids' involvement in the arts can be. They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAMM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hold on, selector.
You're listening to The Wine Crush, and I'm Laura Lawson. And right now, we're pondering all the stories of the past decade. So it's just you and I today, sitting back, talking about the things that impact what we drink and why we drink it. Well, strangely enough, in my top 10 stories of the past decade, we're going to include a bug. Yes, it would not be talking about the 2000s if we didn't talk about the glassy wing sharpshooter. Now, most of y'all are certainly aware of Phylloxera. We've done a lot of stories on it. It talked about how all the vines were killed. It talked about the little root louse that would cause all the immeasurable damage. Well, that root louse is nothing compared to the glassy wing sharpshooter. It's been on our radar since the mid-90s. But it was actually in 2007 that the first live one was found in Napa Valley. Now, a bug, how can this bug be the story of the century? Simply because it is potentially the most deadly thing to come after grapes ever. There's no cure for it. There's no way to get rid of them. There's no way to stop them. They are the locust of the wine world, and they are coming after our vineyards. So, something to remember. In the late 1800s, they talk about the great Bordeaux and Burgundy wines. Well, they had brought over American rootstock and had brought Phylloxera with them. Phylloxera devastated Bordeaux, absolutely devastated it, to the point where they didn't think it would recover. Well, we are in that same situation now, and it has started. It is already in Southern California. It's moving north. Ultimately, the glassy wing sharpshooter, it causes Pierce's disease with no known treatment, and we are spending billions of dollars trying to figure out how to stop it. In fact, there's an own warning line, 1-866-BUG-SPOT. In fact, if you're in Napa or Sonoma and even think you see a glassy wing sharpshooter, you have to call. So keep that in mind for those of you who are traveling out there. Please learn the difference between what a glassy wing sharpshooter is. By the way, their pictures literally are posted at the post office versus a termite. There's not that much difference. But yes, the bug is bugging us for the past decade and probably will continue to do so. Well, another big story of the past decade is certainly a lesson in morality. It's certainly a lesson in empires and how they can rise and fall. All you have to do is look back at the country of Australia for the past decade and know how the mighty can bring themselves down. In 2000, if you had asked people about Australia, they would have been able to tell you about Penfold's Grange. They would tell you about Wolf Blast. They tell you about Michael Twelvetree. They talk about Two Hands. They talk about Dead Arm. all these 98, 99, 100-point big, beautiful Shirazes, expensive, hard to get, amazing wines. Well, now it's 2009, and all we're talking about is the fact that Australia's ripping up vines, the fact that they have actually created Australia's first family wine, a whole conglomerate devoted to bringing back the $6 billion industry that Australian wine is. In the past decade, we went to having those amazing wines such as Penfold Grange drop down to things such as $2 Koala. We have watched it overproduce, we have watched it overcrop, and we have watched the whole reputation of a country be decimated, just like the sharpshooter is going to do to Napa Valley. It's been horrendous, it's been hard, but ultimately the continent still has a lot left to give us. So as we watched Australia peak and valley throughout the past 10 years, we need to look ahead in 2010 and remember there are great areas, whether it's Barossa, whether it's the Clare Valley, whether it's Coonawarra, great areas that do indeed produce great wine. Please don't forget that. No matter what they say about the Koala, no matter what they say about the wines coming out of there, whatever critter wines you see these days, they can't compare to the high-end quality. Australia will get back on its horse, but we're going to help it. When you think about it, Australia's the fourth largest exporter in the world. They actually beat the United States now. In 2000, they shipped more wines to the UK than France did. Now they're not shipping any more than Spain is. Keep that in mind. Keep that in perspective. Pride does cometh before the fall. As we look finally back in retrospect, we have to include the last one. And it's ironic, my producer was on it. We opened the show with a great scene from probably one of the most defining moments in the wine business. Yes, I hate to admit it, I hate to say it, but the small little independent movie Sideways did more to influence wine drinking and wine buying in the past 10 years than anything the media could have done. Yes, because of Sideways, it actually, truly raised a great varietal to everyone's consciousness. We have tried to do it with The Spectator, we tried to do it with Parker, we tried to do it on the radio, but it took a little guy named Miles Raymond to tell everyone to drink Pinot Noir, and by God, he's not going if they serve Merlot. Well, it was interesting the impact that this movie had. Pinot Noir sales immediately rose 16%. They came to the forefront of people's consciousness. They understood them. They got them. They bought them. Merlot? Merlot took a hit. Merlot took a 14% hit after that. It's a shame. Today, we still fight the sideways effect with Merlot because ultimately, everyone talks dry, drinks sweet, and Merlot is the grape for the American populace, but because of that revolting little creature, we're having a hard time convincing people of that. And I think that helps define that whole decade is the impact that Sideways has. What does it say about our country's wine knowledge? What does it say about our country's wine consumer? What does it say about each one of us who can be impacted so thoroughly and so heartily by one character's opinion on wine? It means, yes, we have a lot left to learn, but two, it means we're open-minded. It means that we're guiding ourselves on what we want to try, what we want to think, and how we want to think outside the box. Do I think Pinot Noir sales would have reached the allocation and the difficulty it is to find it without the movie? No, I don't. I'd been talking about Pinot for 20 years before then and had a hard time getting people to drink it. So I think as we look to media, as we look to incorporating wine in our true lifestyle, just like the movie Sideways did, then that's how we're going to fulfill our American culture. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. We don't have to declare our hatred for one varietal, but we do have to look at wine outside the box. It's not just sitting down at a wine tasting. It's not just sitting down at dinner. It's not what does pair well with my steak? What does pair well with my spaghetti? It is what pairs well with my life. And if we can take our guidance and our wine buying savvy from an independent movie that showed in very few theaters, then obviously we're ready to take the next step. We're ready to learn more about wine. So Miles, which is actually, of course, Mr. Paul Giamatti, my hat's off to you. I realize I made the statement once that if I saw you in a parking lot, I wouldn't hit the brakes. But of course, you've done a lot for the wine business. You've done a lot for Pinot Noir, and you've done a lot for wine drinkers everywhere. We're going to take a small break right now, but when we return, I'm going to make my predictions for 2010 and, of course, talk about the New Year's Eve toast that won it all.
Break out the ale! He's been a thirsty!
The Wine Crush.
Well, I guess we better get on with it.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need health insurance, you need to make this free call and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. They specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it.
Here's the number. Call right now. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Don't take risks with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable family health insurance, call now.
800-799-9991. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Not available in all states. Exclusions and limitations apply. North Richland Hills, Texas. Policy series on file. Not licensed in New York.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactive works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactive and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactive Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-727-8614.
Proactive's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial plus a free refining face mask. Call toll free now, 1-800-727-8614. That's 1-800-727-8614.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chomping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Ayah!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood, concrete, brick walls, trees, small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars. It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
Listening to The Wine Crush, I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, and we are finishing up our retrospective of the past decade in wine. Well, we have touched on all the great stories of 2009, but what do we look ahead for in the next decade? Well, I did pretty good on my prediction of Donna Estate, so I'm going to try my hand at the top 10 things we can look for. Number one, labeling in the United States. We're going to see some strictures happen on that. We're going to see some definitions, whether it's an ounce serving, whether it's the calories in wine, whether it's further health warnings, or whether it's actually where the AVA is from. We're going to see definitions, and your labels are going to change. Also, number two, as the Americans proceed to consume more and more wine, we're going to become the number one wine importer in the world. And because of that, we're already seeing it in France, but we're going to see it worldwide. Labels around the world are going to dumb down. They're going to cater to the American public. They're going to explain clearly what they are. If it says Corton somewhere on there, I promise you it will say Chardonnay. As we look ahead also, I think drinking locally is something we're going to see more and more of. Every year they say that the number of wineries increases 8%. There are now wineries in all 50 states. I think we will find us drinking within our state. I think we'll find ourselves drinking within our country. It is something natural. Miss Alice Waters started it with eating, and I think we'll see it with drinking as well. I think we're going to see a return to lower alcohol wines. Definitely the 2000s saw some very, very high alcohol wines. When you started getting Chardonnays that came in at 14.8, it's a little over-manipulated. I think in the next decade, we'll see grapes speaking more for themselves and being picked less ripe. If you're less ripe, lower alcohol, which will be great for all of us who tend to drink more than we should. I think we're going to see a lot of chemical cloning in the next decade, and I think it's going to be a hot topic. Within now, within our reach, they can take a bottle of O'Brien, they can sit down, they can actually decide what is in it, what made it good, and duplicate it. That will become widespread, and it will become a problem. We will have many arguments about that. I think we're going to see the definitive rise of Chile. We've seen a little bit. We're going to really see it come into its own. I also think we're going to see the rise of China. There's no way a country that big doesn't have exceptional places to grow grapes. We're going to see deconstruction. These big conglomerates are slowly going to drop off their wineries. We're going to see a return to the family wineries. We're going to see people standing on their own. What came up must go down, and it will happen sooner. Of course, we talked about it. We're going to see the Pierce's panic. Pierce's disease is going to become a huge topic in the next decade, and hopefully some brilliant chemist at UC Davis will find a way around it. We're going to go back to barrels. I think we're going to see different packaging. We're going to see different ways of drinking wine at restaurants, whether it's shipped in cask, shipped in keg, shipped in plastic. We're going to find new ways besides the bottles. But I think the biggest story coming up for the next decade is going to be water. Of course, there's water everywhere, not a drop to drink. As we look at California, the problems it's having now, our wine world is really going to feel the impact as the water rights battle heats up. So keep that in mind. These were my predictions, and I hope that all of them turn out to at least have a silver lining. Well, of course, you know we ran a contest asking for the best toast for New Year's Eve, and we have gotten several, and this one came in anonymously. So I offer this toast to you, our listeners, as you celebrate the end of 2009, look forward to 2010, and raise your glass to what's bound to be an exciting decade. A toast to the teenage years of the century. May they be filled with the joy, laughter, and awe of discovery that our own teenage years delivered to us. And may they be open to all possibilities as we were at that age. I can't think of a better way to sum up a great year of 2009 and to look ahead for 2010. Well, I'm Laura Lawson. You've been listening to The Wine Crush. And as always, we remind you, sip socially, drink responsibly, drink what you like, not what you're told. But most importantly, in Vino Veritas, in wine, there is truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next year.